Good afternoon. This is Loretta Bertillon at the Tulsa Historical Society and Museum. And my guest is Jeannie McDaniel. I met Jeannie when she came into my house to do a neighborhood alert program after I had a house robbery. And her career has ballooned from there. Jeannie, start me out with, let's do some personal things first, okay?
Okay.
Tell a little bit about your family.
Okay, I am married to Joe McDaniel. And together we have five kids. I had four from a previous marriage, and he had adopted a son, and so we have a blended family. And we've been together 34 years. So when our seniors in high school went to college, we got married. And both of us were runners, and it had sort of across the lifespan. We started running in our 30s, and now we're 70s and 80s, and we're still going out the door every day and lacing up our shoes and enjoying being outside and exercising. So our kids graduated from high schools here in Tulsa. They've all graduated from college. They all have postgraduate degrees, and now we have eight grandchildren between us. And we have a saying in our family, I can't take credit for it, but I like it, and it is, having grandchildren is like finding a third chamber of your heart you didn't know you had. And we cherish our grandchildren, and we know they have to live with their parents, and but nonetheless, we take them every chance we can get. We spend time with them. We enjoy being with them. And we're excited to see them be productive citizens in this world.
Okay. And when is your birthday? Do you mind sharing that?
Nope. December 10th.
Okay.
And I will also share that I believe in lifelong learning, like lifelong running. So I did not finish college until 2004. After my youngest graduated from med school, he said, Mom, it's your turn. So while I worked at the city of Tulsa, I returned to TCC in the evenings and got my associate's degree, and then I went to OU Tulsa and got my bachelor's degree. I wanted to set a good example for my grandkids, and while I think probably you should go to college when you're younger, that also gave me a way to sit in classrooms with younger people and to get their perspective on what they wanted in life. So it was a good education for me to help me with my jobs. And it allowed me to accomplish a goal I'd long had.
Okay, well, let's talk about your jobs.
Okay.
You started in Tulsa with Crime Commission?
I did. Susan Savage hired me, mm-hmm. and she was a young woman who was the director of the Crime Commission. It was a nonprofit organization, and we ran Crime Stoppers and Alert Neighbors. So both dealt with crime and police, and people who really had sad things happen in their lives. Their homes had been broken into. They were fearful in their homes. They'd been robbed or maybe a car stolen, property taken from them. And we know that people consider their homes their castles. It's where they keep their most prized possessions, their pets, their loved ones, and their jewelry, and their guns. So protecting those things and helping people feel more confident about the neighborhoods they lived in and the people they associated with, it was very heartwarming. And so, much like yourself, people usually called our offices after they were victims of crimes. And then we would get them together and meet. And back in the 80s, we met in people's living rooms. And we got them to know each other because we were reaching that period where people were so busy, women had joined the workforce, often they didn't know their neighbors. And so we helped them to know that usually within a mile of your home or what you can see from your front door is very important to you. You want it to look nice. You want it to smell nice. If your mother comes to visit, you want your home value to be nice, something that you're proud of. And so we really worked on that. We worked on everything from not just knowing your neighbors, knowing your name, so you would call each other if something went wrong, that you'd communicate. Of course, fast forward 30 years, now we have, you know, cell phones, which we didn't have back then. We have personal alarms on our homes and cars and all kinds of cameras. Back then we didn't, so we really had to rely on each other to be the eyes and ears that help people out. And you might not like your neighbor, but we knew that it was important for you to have a working relationship with them. So it was very rewarding for me because I really got to listen to what people thought and how they felt. And we knew that home invasions, and we knew feeling safe in their home was a critical key to them liking Tulsa.
So that job was a lot of going in, like you said, to homes and getting the neighbors to come in to meet each other.
Right.
And then you put the signs up. And
we did.
Just to ward off
maybe some burglars. It was a great education for me in psychology, really, hearing how people felt. You know, some people bought guns, some people got alarm systems, some people moved. So home invasion is a very personal thing. When you come home and you think someone's gone through your underwear, you know, looking for that jewelry or weapon, they've seen your pictures of your children, your family. It's a very personal crime, and it changes the way you feel, often about where you live, about your neighbors. And, you know, we've seen violence rise over the years, too, as more people have firearms in their homes and different family living situations. It's not a mom and a dad, a dog, and a few kids. Things have really evolved and changed. And so that program really helped me to grow in a lot of ways and hopefully pass that to help other people.
Now, what about the Crime Commission? Is this kind of separate or just all?
It was the Citizens Crime Commission was actually formed from the Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce in 1979. Martin Fake was sort of the godfather of that, hired Susan Savage, and she brought Crime Stoppers to Tulsa. And I have to chuckle. You turn on TV now, there's so much true crime and CSI and unsolved mysteries and homicides and, you know, Adam Walsh. And we were the precursor to all that. Back in 1979, Channel 8 agreed to go out, and we reenacted crimes. I mean, we would find the actors, and reenact them and show them once a week and have it in the paper. And people want to be sleuths. You know, they want to be Agatha Christie. And so it really excited people to think that maybe they could find one of the most wanted, because we used to have most wanted pictures, and people would cut them out of the paper and tape them on their dashboards. And I'm like, are you kidding me? But I think they want to do the right thing. And so after Susan did that for 2 years, I came on board, and we really kicked off Alert Neighbors with a volunteer force out of our office was in the basement of the Chamber of Commerce. And so it spawned that nonprofit, which the Chamber is known to have done for many years. And with Alert Neighbors, volunteers went to homes, and we used Tulsa Cable, if you can believe it, way back when it was out on Sheridan. And we carried VCRs, and we had big 8-track tapes, and we would show people how to target harden and put in deadbolts and leave lights on outside at night and have a house number where you could see it, much of which we still tell people today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have cell phones, but who knows where your home is. And so it was target hardening, you know, putting holly bushes under all those windows so no one would want to crawl in there, and just a lot of things like that. And but it was very rewarding, and again, it gave me the opportunity to grow as the city of Tulsa grew, and working with police chiefs and working with neighborhood leaders.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think your goals for Tulsa have always been maybe some safety and security.
It started out, that was my focus. And for someone who had never had a lot of public speaking or media exposure, all of a sudden I got a lot. I mean, Carolyn Jenkins at Channel 6, is, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning show is where I kind of got broken in. The media has always been a good friend to me in Tulsa, and I use them as a way to educate people, whether it was the Tribune or the Tulsa World or all the stations now. It's a great way to educate people. And someone told me once, well, no one watches at 5 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the morning. No, they do. Because if you had a bad hair day, they would remind you the next time they saw you. Oh, we saw you. But it's really communicating with people and, you know, helping them to be the best they can be and the safest they could be. That then segued into my work with the city. Roger Randall contacted me when he was mayor, and Susan was his chief of staff at the time, Susan Savage. But unbeknownst to her, Roger had contacted me and said, I want you to think about coming to work for the city and bringing what you do in neighborhoods to make them safe, create this Office of Neighborhoods and make it a full-time position. And so I transitioned to the city of Tulsa, which was really the first time I had health insurance, dental insurance, and many things nonprofits didn't have in those days. And Roger was very particular about what he wanted. When he was campaigning, he did neighborhood coffees. And in these coffees, as he was running for office for mayor, and he had served before in the Senate at the state level, he realized people didn't know he wasn't a neighbor. They didn't know who he was. And he was the candidate there to speak. And he said, this is sad when people don't know their neighbors. So he created the block party, the annual block party that so many neighbors put on for years. And so it gave people a chance to have the firemen, the police come and have a picnic and get to know your neighbors, because he said these people need to know each other. And he was right. And from that, came a really interesting network. We discovered that as we have the third penny sales tax here in Tulsa and you have bond issues, we wanted things in those packages that neighborhoods wanted, whether it was streets or sewers or safe ditches, if you will, like Fry Ditch, Joe Creek. People wanted those paved. They wanted them clean. They wanted to get rid of rats and snakes and homeless people living there. It just varied from, I remember we widened Sheridan. We widened 61st. We widened 71st. All those were ideas from meetings we had with neighbors. So in the Office for Neighborhoods, we created more neighborhood associations, if you will, all over the city. And then we met with them quarterly. As Susan became mayor, she really invested a lot more into that office in that we set up the Mayor's Action Center. And really, we wanted to put a welcome mat at City Hall. This City Hall should belong to the people of Tulsa. They should be welcome there. They shouldn't feel that it's a difficult place to come in. And so we tried to put that welcome mat out and let them know when they called the mayor's office was located on the 11th floor of the old City Hall. My office was on the 11th floor of old City Hall because Roger and Susan wanted to send the message that that's where the priorities should be. The citizens' priorities should be at the top where it's important and decisions are made. And we carried that through, whether it was a tree ordinance or curfews for kids when we were having teenagers in the park after dark. All those things, painting over graffiti, picking up trash, the things people would see out their front door that bothered them, we would work on those issues. It translated often to things on the ballot because they told us it was important. And consequently, I don't think Tulsa's ever lost a third penny sales tax vote. I'm pretty sure they haven't. Because often on there are things people throughout the city have told us are important to them.
Do you think we get a fair representation from all the parts of town on that? Does that vary?
I think it could vary. In that time, too, we evolved into a new a city council form of government. And I was there when that began. We went out of the commission form into the city council form. So then we formed the 9 city councils, councilors or council districts. And now I think the way it works, I would often work hand in hand with a councilor. Like if they had district meetings, I would try to be with them to help organize that. And some of the councilors have taken it very seriously. And I think most of the city councilors here do walk door to door. That's still the campaigning way here. And in the smaller districts. Obviously, if you're running for a statewide seat or a countywide seat, it's very hard to knock on, 100,000 doors. But the city councilors do knock on doors, and they still find that line of communication, talking with strangers, if you will, or talking with neighbors, as a way to find out what people think and want.
That's a good feel for Tulsa compared to some towns.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you're working for, so where did you go from there?
Well, so the Office for Neighborhoods, I stayed there 10 years with Mayor Savage, and then she went on to do other things and later became Secretary of State, I stayed in Public Works and worked with recycling and under Charles Hart, and during that time I finished my degrees. And so when I graduated from OU, the representative in my district was running for the Senate, and she asked me if I would consider running for her office. And I learned a lot more about citizens than I ever knew, because what I never knew at the city in the Crime Commission, when I knocked on doors to run for office and I would walk at night and on weekends, I realized how many people didn't have insurance. I realized how many people had been laid off from the dot-com downsizing. I realized how many people between 50 and 65 had no insurance. They could get jobs as a contractor, but they had no health insurance. People would tell you terribly sad stories. They needed a colonoscopy. They couldn't afford it. They had kids who needed orthodontia. They couldn't afford it. Even worse, I discovered as I knocked on these doors, and these were the very neighborhoods I had worked with on crime and quality of life issues, but these are quality of life issues that the city can't impact. Education, how important education was. Were their children getting the best they could get at the school that they attended? Churches were downsizing then, as they've even further downsized, and often churches were the ones that were filling in the gaps, the food, the clothing, the supplemental utility bills and rent, if you will. I met people who would come to the door and they lived on their Social Security check, and they might have been a retired teacher. Their income was $400 a month. They had no insurance on their homes. They owned their homes, so there was no requirement for insurance. So you could see the homes falling down around them. So running for office opened up a whole different part of my heart that I hadn't even realized these people I've been dealing with were facing such other issues. Extended families living together because of loss of jobs. A lot of people going to prison. Their kids were going to prison. And here they are, 85, teaching their 16-year-old grandchild to drive. Now that's scary. And I knock on a door and they'd be sleeping until school was out waiting for the kid to come home. And I would think, oh my goodness. I realized and soon learned that Oklahoma was number one in percentage of grandparents raising grandchildren, which was just heartbreaking to me. And often those kids weren't in the system. They weren't in DHS custody. They were, if someone went to prison or disappeared, the grandparents just stepped in and took over, often on that same limited income of Social Security. And so just having meals on the table, keeping the heat on, I mean, there were families who had to decide between food or electricity. And so I learned a lot in that campaign. And it really, when I went to the state, I decided health and education had to be the way. We had to do more to educate people. Education can lead to jobs. You know, it was so sad to me that we had so many people without health care coverage. Now, that being said, we're far better off here in Tulsa than you are in Locust Grove. the first thing I would say to people, are you a veteran? Or are you Native American? Those were two ways I could help them into the systems that might be able to meet their needs temporarily until they got on their feet. But as time went by, I realized that urban areas in Oklahoma have far more services, mental health services and medical services. You know, we opened the Bedlam clinics here. So the further you move away from the metropolitan areas in the state, the more needy people are to have basic services, especially mental health services, and availability of jobs because there's no public transportation. So I learned so much. I feel like that was my master's because looking at Oklahoma, and I went back and read Angie DeBow because I thought, who are these people? There's some weird thinking people here. And so I read Angie DeBow. I learned all I could about the history of Oklahoma to see what made these people think the way they did. And I'm proud now that I call Oklahoma home, and it was a wonderful place to raise our children. At the same time, we have a long way to go, a long way to go.
How long were you as a state representative?
12 years. That's our term limit, was 12 years. So okay. I served 12 years. And I went to the program of Leadership Oklahoma, which helped to take me to different regions of the state, much like Leadership Tulsa, where you learn everything there is to know about the nonprofits and the organizations in our city. Leadership Oklahoma, I was on death row in McAllister. I was on hog farms and out at Seaboard in the major industry where we do all our butchering and our, you know, pigs out that way. You know, I saw where Geronimo was imprisoned. You really went from Broken Bow to Kenton, Oklahoma, and from, you know, Miami, all around. And that helped me, too, because the state is so unique with 39 Indian tribes. And, of course, gaming was voted on the year before I was elected. So that's opened a whole new door, too. When you think about it, the year I ran in 2004, Mark Zuckerberg was just developing Facebook in his basement, I think. And so I had no Facebook, you know, or nothing like that. Mm-hmm. And so it was a much simpler time to run campaigns, raise money, and meet with people and listen to what people said they wanted. Today it's much more complicated with social media and all of the different ways money's raised now through the court systems, the Citizens United, all the different things they've done. I think it'd be very hard to do today. I'm not sure a normal person like me, just a mother, a grandmother, an athlete, could still run for office and be elected. It's getting harder and harder to have real citizen representation.
Because of the...
The money.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of money.
I know it's harder to talk to our representatives and senators because you have to go online, and that's not an easy site to get to.
And, you know, I've been dismayed somewhat in well, people still call me if they have a problem in their neighborhood. And I said, well, you need to call the mayor's, well, you can't call the mayor's action center because you get recordings. And that's been the one thing, the personalized touch. And I try to change with the times. And I know if you do the same thing 3 years in a row, you're getting behind. And, you know, I have an iPhone, I have an iPad. My mom just got a laptop. She's 92. And she has an iPhone. And she has an iPad. And I know we have to do that. But with technology, I miss the human touch to it. I really do. And I'm so thankful sometimes when my parents' cable goes out in Phoenix that I can still call Cox and they will talk to my mother and talk to me and put it back on. So some people are still talking to us. But sometimes you have to search harder for them. And I know when I go to City Hall today, I have to have like a clearance check and go through a metal detector and I have to find a place to park. And it's become a little more complicated even to have the human touch of serving on boards and things. It's gotten more difficult, and I think our leaders have to decide how they can do it most effectively. It's hard.
So when did you leave office?
I left office in after 12 years in 2016, and I've been very fortunate. Just all the years of people that have you've known through being at your children's elementary schools, being at churches, being at Scouts, being at all the activities that your children take you into and your grandchildren. So, and I have to say, that helps you. When you're on the soccer field, you're hearing people talk. They're talking about the construction, the orange barrels, the cones, the water quality, the sewer smells. You can get a lot of information if you sit at a TU ball game, you know, if they're not clapping all the time. You can hear conversations that really help you to understand the fabric that makes up Tulsa. And I think I look at Tulsa as a quilt. And so I think that that's important for people who are making decisions about laws and ordinances and how we run our city. I think that's important. I have to brag a little about Tulsa. The Gathering Place has been exciting to me. Because for the first time, I've always gone to the river. Since 1978, I've been on river trails at least once a week. If I'm in town, I'm there once a week and often three or four times a week, taking advantage of that trail system we have. And to watch it grow and develop to encircle Tulsa, you know, I just have so much pride when I'm in other cities and bragging about it. And I'm excited about having the 2020 National Ironman come here. I mean, I'm so excited we got that. And the marathon, Route 66. So we have come a long way in health and fitness facilities here too, as well as some of the other things that we've done well. But with the Gathering Place, I've watched, and from the very beginning, the early weekend that it opened, I've noticed the ethnicity and the different languages I hear and the different types of people that go there. And it's exciting to me. I see buses of kids come and their mouths just open and they just look, it's like a playground made for them, for children. And you know, when you go back and look at child development, what we know about children, and you know, we're at the top of everybody's ladder, I guess you would say, on early childhood education here in Tulsa, thanks to George Kaiser. We recognized early the importance of, even before Head Start, early childhood. And I think when we know the brain development of children, and I look at the Gathering Place and I see parents there, I can see it's like watching little brains just develop quicker and faster, and I'm glad I don't have to climb that stuff and keep after these kids. But I'm really proud of what we're doing, and I think this is a springboard to the skate park there. I remember when Tulsa wouldn't have a skate park, and I was tasked by Mayor Savage of building a skate park in Tulsa. Nobody wanted it. Nobody in 9 council districts would take it because they thought it was going to be graffiti and drugs and these wild, crazy kids. And most of the big churches had banned skateboarding because they would put wax on the stairs. And these kids would say, we have no place to go, no place to go. And I had to laugh. I thought, okay, George Kaiser figured it out. My little skate park that we built in West Tulsa was never a scene of crimes or drugs or graffiti. It was a place where kids went, kids that might not look like other kids or kids that had better balance than most of us. And they would take their bikes there and their skateboards. And so I think the Gathering Place for me was a culmination of a place for everybody, a place where you can sit, you can watch the sun go down, you can see the sun come up. I think it's going to be a springboard for more good things to happen in our trail systems. And more kids are going to be out there with their little hearts pounding, which is important to me. I know the obesity rate in our state is so high. Among children, it's so high. And I remember at one point when I was serving, there was a study that came out that said my grandchildren would not have the life expectancy that I did. And I was appalled. But when I looked at exercise, fitness, and the diet today, and I realized how fortunate I am that I've been able to be healthy and fit, and I had good role models who always believed in getting out the door, don't come back till it's dark, and play games and be in activities and keep your heart some muscle and make it work. And so I think today, as I see that sort of facility, I see more kids on bikes, I see them skating, I'm happy. It gives me hope that that study was wrong. I do want my grandkids to have my life expectancy. And I think ours just went up, I read in the paper today.
You mean in
the United States?
In the United States?
Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's 78 or 79 now.
Oh.
And that's exciting. I can't say that for Oklahoma. I don't know what it is. At one point we went down, women went down a bit. But that's just not having access to good health care.
Uh-huh. Well, since you've mentioned exercise and health care, mm-hmm. Brag a little bit about your it's not all bragging. I mean, it is just the honest truth. Tell me something about your physical fitness and your family, how that's all fit together so beautifully.
When I was a single mom, and I was with four kids, I had been a swimmer and played a little bit of tennis, but all of a sudden I had to have something that I could do when I worked. And for a short while, I had a paper route. My son had a paper route, so we were an active family. But I found that running was something. The Tulsa Run had just started the year before, and running wasn't nearly as popular as it is now. And, in fact, sometimes when you'd run around your neighborhood, people would yell at you, like, you're going to have a heart attack, or, you know, why don't you slow down, or why don't you, you know, bake cookies or something. But I remember going to Famous Footwear. I don't even think there were running stores back then, and buying a pair of shoes. And I remember paying $30 for my first pair of running shoes. And I remember someone saying to me, well, you really better wear those out because that's a lot of money for a pair of tennis shoes, you know, like kids. Yeah, $30. And they were, I think they were Brooks or Adidas. And they were a horrible color of blue with yellow on them and went with nothing. But running around the neighborhood, finding other mothers that wanted to run, and then entering my first Tulsa Run in 79, I just sort of, it clicked for me. It was inexpensive. I didn't need a court. I didn't need a partner. I could do it. My kids could do their homework while I would be running around the block. They could come out. I could do spelling words while I was running. I mean, we really had a system set up. And at the school, I have to say, they went to Grissom. There was a gym teacher there at the time who also emphasized running. So my kids were sort of getting it there. And then, you know, they had this mom who ran around a lot.
Was that Mr. Childers?
No, who was it? It might have been. He was a Grissom. But I remember my son ran a marathon. He would count the miles until you could get a marathon.
Uh-huh.
And they had the Presidential Leadership Awards came out back then, and you had to do so many push-ups and pull-ups and things. And one of the things I have always strived to do and continue is to be a good role model for my kids and grandkids and not tell them what to do, but show them by doing it. And then making it fun, if at all possible. So consequently, one thing led to another, and my first Tulsa Run, I think, or the second maybe, one of them, my son beat me by 5 minutes, and another daughter was right behind me for 5 minutes. But I figured we were all safe, you know, we were with a bunch of people running around.
Uh-huh.
And so they took pride in wearing the T-shirts, and they've all grown up to have run marathons and ultra distances, and fallen in love with triathlons and different events. My son got me involved in the Grand Lake Triathlon and one that the Y did. In fact, I was in a triathlon where Lance Armstrong won, and he was only 15. That probably tells you how old I am. But it just was a challenge, and I've always liked challenges. I also learned through running discipline, and that is setting goals and achieving them. And giving yourself a time period, you know, to build up and follow a plan. So I'm really good at following pathways and plans. And so one thing led to another, and it turned out to be something that was affordable and that I seemed able to do. And so I went into ultra running because I thought marathons were just hard because then everyone ran fast. But through the years, through the 40 years I've done this now, and I've done 100-mile races, and I've done 24- and 48-hour races, and now we're trying to do a marathon in every state, my daughter and I think I'm up to 25 states now. And we just find the joy in being outside, and it can be a spiritual time, it can be a time to solve problems, it can be a time with your friend to share ideas, or just the idea of time when you're not on a phone or not. I don't talk on the phone when I'm running. And people have started listening to music more, but it can be just a good therapy. And so it worked for me, it's worked for my family, it's led us across the Grand Canyon, down on the river in the Grand Canyon, hiking a lot. And as the grandkids have matured, we've taken them so many miles here and so many miles there, and they have enjoyed it. We do have one reputation that I have to tell you. Family friends of my grandchildren will tell you, they often don't know what they're in for when they go on vacation with us, because we are active. So whether we're in Hawaii, you know, we're going to be snorkeling, we're going to be running, we're going to be making an adventure, or mountain climbing to see what's on the top, or to get to the top of that 14,000. I remember running up Pikes Peak one time. I ran a marathon out there. And I just think knowing what your body can go through and how you can talk yourself into doing things and set goals was probably just as important for my work as it was for my personal life.
Well, I've got to ask you, with all the distances you've done,
yeah,
have you had any big injuries?
I never have.
That's fantastic.
No, I've been very fortunate. But I've always known I had to go to work on Monday morning. And so Mayor Savage used to say to me, I can get you one of those great big belt buckles, because that's what you would get. If you run 100 miles, you get these big belt buckles.
Oh.
And they're big, like kind of like a rodeo steer rider. And she used to always laugh and say, Jeannie, seriously, I can get you a big belt buckle. But I sort of liked it. You do it in the rain, you could do it in the snow and the ice, and they're really mental challenges. And I think much like if you play tennis or people play golf, or you know, you go out, you don't know what the day is going to give you, but you're going to give it the best you can, and you're outside. And I think that's an important thing for us today. I look at my grandparents who worked their entire life outside 7 days a week. And so much today people spend inside, behind screens, that I still think their body needs to be challenged and given workouts to be as healthy as they can be. And that's been my goal.
Okay. Are you involved in anything politically now?
Very little. I do some volunteer work. When I first retired, I did some prison ministry work through my church. And it's when I was at the city of Tulsa, the United Methodist churches in this area went together and bought some apartments for people coming out of prison to transition back into community life. And it was a drug-free program, but they had employment. They could get their lives back together, reconcile with their kids. And I've done that pretty much for the last 3 years. I'm just at the tail end of that now because I'm trying to run a marathon every state. But I think there's periods in your life when you do different volunteer work. And I have to say, volunteers are so key. At the Crime Commission, I didn't do all those meetings. I had volunteers that helped. We used to have a volunteer council here in Tulsa, and all the nonprofits who use volunteers, but they may still have it. It used to run out the Community Service Council. But you learn a lot being volunteers and working with volunteers. And so I was a volunteer, this is an old organization, for Call Rape for 5 years. And as a single mom, I could be on call from midnight to 6 a.m. And usually my kids were asleep when I would be on the phone with people in crisis. And so you learn, you can learn so much as a volunteer. And I think as volunteers, we get far more back than we ever give in our time. And that was another lifelong lesson that you sort of learn. I always say the important things in life I learned from my kids, and that's true. But I also learned so much from volunteering. I learned from all the people that I thought I was helping, but I was really growing through them.
Mm-hmm. Tulsa seems to be a city that has a lot of volunteer organizations and opportunities.
And I think as we've retired, I find more and more people in the reading programs at school, reading partners, and just I just think it's critical that we give back, because you get so much more when you from giving than you do from receiving. And so, yeah, I still have some volunteer things I do, and I like that. I think it's important. I also think it's important as we age. And I see people out there volunteering at the airport when I come in, and some of them have their dogs with them now. We have ambassador dogs. And I think staying active after we retire is so important. And as my daughter and I have traveled around, all of us travel. I mean, when we were floating the Grand Canyon this summer, there were people older than me there. I was not the oldest person on the trip. And there's still people who want to paint a different sunset or paint a different sunrise or see rocks in a different way. And they're bright, intelligent people, but they still have that curiosity and the desire to participate. And I just think that's really important. Otherwise, I think your living room becomes your, you know, your world in the television set, and that's certainly not, I don't think that's a healthy way to age if you don't have to.
A little more limiting than you want, I think.
Well, definitely for me, but I think for all people.
Uh-huh. I think you're right about that.
Well, first of all, it's been very helpful being married to someone who has a love of exercise and the outdoors, like my husband. And when Joe retired from Oxy at 49 years of age, he'd been there 30 years, actually city service, and he had to take on another career. He went on to help edit a running magazine, and that lasted for a while. And then he went back to a passion of his, and that is checkers. And he's a very active checker player. He puts on tournaments across the country. Last one was in Las Vegas a year ago, August. He has a big tournament he's bringing to Tulsa this year. There'll be people from Italy, Barbados, Russia. It's exciting, and he finds such joy in it.
I didn't know he did that.
Oh, yes, yeah. And so he keeps saying this is his last tournament that he sponsors. And he plays. Right now he plays at the Gathering Place when the weather is nice. He loves playing with kids. He's played at Riverport. Anyone who comes up that wants to play a game of checkers.
He has a challenge he puts out there.
Oh, yeah. He can win $25. And when he played at the Promenade, there were all kinds of kids all the time who wanted to play to win that $25. And he's just begun. This week he played for the first time at the Market there at 11th and Lewis. Uh-huh. But he loves it. And it's exciting for me to watch Joe. He had run all the Tulsa runs until this year, and he did not finish this year. However, he's sort of merged that running life after two bouts with cancer into this checkers. And he's on the internet every day with people from all over the world, literally. They play online, they communicate with each other, and then he puts up money, and yeah, they'll be here in August 31st, I think, is the tournament he's putting on this year. And so, who would have known that at the time we met 34 years ago, we met through running, and he knew how to use WordStar, if you remember that.
Program?
When I was at the Crime Commission, Susan wanted me to put out a newsletter, and I didn't know anything. I mean, we had a correcting typewriter in our office. And I heard Joe knew how to use WordStar and the .com, and so we met that way, and then married in 1986, and it's been just a wonderful partnership and a joy ride as we've lived through parents passing away and the joys of watching your children go through college and become adults that we call friends and that we're so proud of. And so it's been a great journey. That being said, we've always called Tulsa home. And Midtown, in particular, has sort of become our stomping ground, and the river parks, which we support, and TU, which we support. That being said, I have to say that this has become such a politicized world we live in today. But with that, the young mayor we have right now, G.T. Bynum, contacted me, and we met before he ran for office. And I did offer to serve on his steering committee. And
even though you're a Democrat.
Even though I'm a Democrat, he's a Republican. He's a bright young man. I am very excited about young people, and I hope I'm forward-looking. He has been very nice to me, and I've always been supportive of him. And I'll tell a quick story. When I told him why I was supporting him, I used to watch City Council. Now, this is really sad. People that watch City Council, you have to watch out for, because it means they have no life. But I was watching one evening, and when he was a city councilor, the animal shelter person would bring an animal once a month to put for adoption. So they would present it on TV.gov, something like that. And so one night there was a dachshund, and this dachshund was very old, and I think it might have been blind in one eye or deaf. It had several disabilities. And I said, so GT had told her, unbeknownst to me, that if no one adopted the dog, he would take it. And as the story goes, GT, she called him to say, tomorrow's the day, dog gone. And he got his kids together. His wife was in law school, I think, at the time. And he got his kids together, unbeknownst to his wife, and went out and got the dog. And I said, GT, and they already had a dog or two, I think. And I said, GT, that took a lot of courage, but that's the type of man I would want to be my mayor. I think it's someone who cares and has a deep understanding about what it takes to make life work for your kids, for our city. And then he told me that I don't think the dog was housebroken either after he got it home.
It was old enough.
So, right, it was really bad. But they went with it. And that's the kind of people we want. It's not a political party. I used to always say to people, when I look in the mirror in the morning, I don't see a Democrat. I see my mother. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what is she doing in my house? Because as I've aged, I look just like her. And I think that's what we need to keep thinking about. It's not our church affiliation. It's not our political party. It's how we connect with each other and how we listen to each other. And I think listening is just as important as talking, probably more important. And that's what I hope my grandkids remember about me, that I could listen to other people and try to understand things that I might not understand at first, but if I know more about it, then I will.
Jeannie, you're a beautiful sponge to absorb and take into yourself.
Thank you.
All you see around you. Thank you.
I'm very fortunate, yeah. So.
Okay, Jeannie, give a little talk about women's progress in sports and acceptance, okay?
Well, we've come a long way in Oklahoma. That being said, with this our 100th year of, you know, the right to vote, looking back at records in Oklahoma, just from when I started running in 78, I would be one of maybe out of 10 people in a race, there would be one or two women. I mean, very small percentage, very small percentage. And there might be a woman trophy, not age group, but a woman trophy. At one point in 1970, they called it the girl trophy, the girl. And I have a record where Rosie Hall was the first woman to complete a race in Tulsa down at ORU. I think it was cross country, 2 mile. And they had no trophy for her. She got to take home a man trophy in an age group.
You're talking about the late
70s? 1970. By the late 70s, there were a few more of us participating. And but today, you go to a race today, more than half the field are women. And they're having fun. They're having a lot more fun. And I remember the first time I watched the marathon in the Olympics when Joe Manoy won, and that was the first year women were allowed to participate at that distance in the Olympics. I remember the first woman in the Boston Marathon. I remember when we weren't supposed to run marathons. So we've come so far, and I think that what we're sending, the message we send to girls today is, you know, your body is strong. It doesn't matter what shape or size you are. There is something out there for you to do and be with us. And you see them laughing and smiling when you stop at these marathons now towards, you know, after people of all the winners have come in and they've gotten in their cars and gone home. There's still people on the course having a good time, and they're smiling. And that's what it should be about. You know, it should be about us working together and supporting each other. And last night I was at the gathering place, and about 6 o'clock there were a group of women who obviously just come from work and change clothes, and they were going out starting at 6 o'clock, and it was dark, to cover some mileage on the trail in a group for safety reasons, and it's well lit. But I thought, wow, this is awesome. This is really awesome when you can take the trail and let it be safe and yours because there's a group of you together. And I just think that means a lot. I think we need to celebrate in Tulsa what we've done, because not every place in the United States can say this. When I travel, one of the things I've noticed is we don't have the trail system. There aren't restrooms. There aren't lights. There aren't water fountains. And that's something we've watched happen. I mean, in 1978, River Parks was a dirt trail, a dirt trail. It went from 11th Street to 56th Street. And then some of us went along the roadway to 61st, and that was it. And I remember when they started paving it, and now, my goodness, today we have a dual trail system of bikes and running and skateboards and rollerblading, and there is just so many things. We used to share, all share together, and that was, there was good and bad. We were out there. But today, there's just so much more. We've opened up Turkey Mountain. We've opened the west side of the river. You know, when we get the new pedestrian bridge up, it'll even be easier to dissect and make the routes more interesting and fun. When I think today that in Midtown I can get on my bike and ride to my daughter's at, 121st and Yale, that's phenomenal on a trail system. I can ride to NSU and Broken Arrow today. And so these are things other cities still don't have. So I think Tulsa has put itself on the map as embracing health and fitness in many ways, much more than Oklahoma City. I can say that with good knowledge. I mean,
that's always the good competition.
That's right. And we used to have competitions with them, and that's gone by the wayside now today. But I think it sends a message to families that want to exercise. And I think with our new park director, I think the city is thinking about reinvesting in their parks, which I think is important because we have a big park system. I want to say over 120 parks in the city of Tulsa, or areas that are called parks. But you can see with La Fortune Park, with the tennis facilities they've put together there, I think voters and citizens are saying they want a place to recreate. They want a place to walk. They want a place to be out of doors. And I think that's a nice message, and I think it resonates well when our chamber tries to bring people here. And people might think of retiring here because our healthcare facilities are phenomenal here. One thing I did learn in serving at the state is as you move out of the urban areas, your healthcare access goes down so drastically. And so for people who are deciding to live their later years, they can live in Midtown, they can walk to restaurants, they can walk to grocery stores, they can get around. And I think that's very important for the future of a city. Make it an age for everyone from birth to, across our whole lifespan.
Okay. I think you need to be on the governor's recreation committee now or something.
Oh, I don't think he would take me. I don't know. I don't know that he has one.
Well, get him to create it. Tell him you need another job.
No, I don't want to know.
Because you're preparing for...
Well, I mean, finish these marathons, the last 25 marathons. We should do 20 this year. And then, there's I will probably keep competing. I mean, I have women across the nation, and we know who we are, and we cheer each other on to be the best we can be. And I have a 74-year-old that really encouraged me to break the 48-hour record this year, and she had held it at one time. So we really support each other in being the best we can be. So if we set a record, we want someone to break it.
So. You're awesome. No. Thank you.
That's the way it goes.